This is Sportsline on WRMJ.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
And by Diamond Ag, local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Lockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
Now from the WRMJ studios in downtown Aledo, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
And good morning, everyone. The WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a long-time tradition that started way back in 1979. We're up and at 'em on a Saturday morning, and we actually have already been working this morning earlier than this. I was, Ty and I, we were on the View from the West podcast till 12:45, was it, this morning?
About 12:45, yeah. Talking about a lot of different topics.
I think it started at 11 o'clock. But
That was a lot of fun, though. I love those guys, man.
And I think this is how I began our conversation. I talk a lot about, celebrating youth and, growing the game, especially. I know football numbers are, we see it challenging with some of these rosters. So I look at, guys last night, like Greg Armstrong, and I sincerely mean this, and Mitch Stormer.
Yep.
Brian Stocking was on the call. Then Matt Randazzo got on late. He was talking, I think, at the WQAD studios, and then he was driving.
Driving home, and then he was in his house, driving his family crazy, probably yelling about high school football.
And then yourself. And I just think about, to me, the pureness of that is what it's all about. So, growing the game and celebrating youth. And they do it for the right reasons. And the other thing, if you can't have, fun, as a fan of interscholastic athletics, come on. That's the celebrating that is just so awesome. And having fun when you do it and talking about the games and talking about the kids and the programs and what kind of Friday night really represents the culture of that. I just think it's awesome. So they do a great job. They may do a better job than anybody.
I think that's
how I start with great positivity this morning. The other thing I wanted to say, too, and I didn't realize this last night, and I know John is not here anymore, but the one thing I always thought that was amazing about him, and a tip of the cap to you, that in terms of broadcasting a game, and this is inside baseball, and people are like, who cares? What's he talking about? They're broadcasting football. But when you're basically kind of producing your own game, running your own board, keeping stats, right, and calling the game, that's the last thing. Thing of the checklist you do is actually call the action with stuff. You basically are running the equipment, doing everything, right? And I was listening at the end of the game, and I'm like, how many reads do you have to do in that thing and keep that straight? So I a major tip of the cap to you and Monty for doing, because John had did it, he did it, and I remember a couple of the times I filled in for him. I'm like, I just can't believe all the papers you have. And the funny thing last night,
the binder. Oh.
But even the funny thing last night. So I had when I was broadcasting the game at Rock Ridge, and I had a bunch of stuff. All these papers all over the place. And Grave said to me, he goes, man.
Yeah.
He goes, that's a lot of papers. He did say that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's how I kind of start my conversation. But I guess we can begin man, the Eagles got to be feeling pretty good. Cause, and I told Coach Graves this the last 2 weeks. I think like Riverdale and Erie Provincetown were kind of the wild cards looking at this season, especially early, trying to get these comparative scores. I'll just say my game last night, people will look at it and say 41-0. Man, the Rockets rolled them. That score was deceiving last night. I thought it was a lot closer than the final result indicated. Kind of like the prior week when they played Riverdale, that was deceivingly closer than it was, where Rock Ridge had a mercy rule in that game in the early third quarter. So I thought interesting, and then Riverdale got their all conference kicker back, which I think is a big thing. But you know, the Eagles scored some points early in that game last night and really just kind of took control of that contest. I know not much scoring in the second half, but again, able to build a nice lead in the first half. And like we said last night on the View from the West podcast, you know, you look at the situation Mercer County was in, they give up a lot of yards and a lot of points to Monmouth Roseville. Week two, they were down 14-0 early.
At the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, they have reversed that, and now 3-1 with, I know, a lot of attention on the Rockets and the Comets. We'll get into that a bit later on next week up at Roscoe Eads Stadium. But I tell you, that's a chance next week where you really feel good if you're the Eagles and you can get the win there. You feel good about maybe solidifying your position and getting to week 10. And I think that's going to be a big game. And I'll just forewarn everybody. Erie Provincetown played without their two top kids last night. The one kid didn't have enough practices for a concussion protocol, but it sounds like he'll play next week, their top receiving threat. And
that's Connor Keegan is his name.
And then I think one of the biggest playmakers in the league on that side is it Dimitri, what's his last
Larson.
Name? Yeah, Larson. I was going to call him Lewis. Dimitri Larson. He didn't play last night, and I think it was like an ankle type of injury from last week. But they look like they were moving pretty good. So I think they'll probably play next week up at Erie against
Provincetown.
Oh, they are playing in Provincetown.
In P-Town, yeah. And I hope they do, because you want to see that. And the Larson kid, he is as dynamic of a player as there is. I mean, he is a very, very good small school football player, so hopefully he's okay and it's not like a lasting injury, because he's an exciting player to watch. So, yeah, you know, I think, well, why don't we start with Rock Ridge and Erie Provincetown, since we've already talked about that a little bit. So you said 41-0, 14-0 was the score at halftime. Rock Ridge led. So it sounds like kind of just another, you know, defensive performance for Rock Ridge. It's become kind of vintage for them, and offensively, you know, putting up 41. You say the score is deceiving, but you know, 41-0 is a good performance for the Rockets against an Erie Provincetown team that, like you said, is shorthanded, but I still think they're a good team. So just kind of business as usual for the Rockets. It sounded like, you know, just kind of cruising to a 41-0 win.
Yeah, they allow 6 first downs, only 2 in the second half. And then, you know, Rock Ridge, they're trying to establish the run a little bit more. And last, because I think they're going to have to run the ball next week against Newman Central Catholic. And last night, Thomas Sowards, we affectionately dub him Agent Zero.
Yep. 16, he's like Gilbert Arenas.
16 carries for 97 yards. And then Jacob Freiermuth, 11 carries for 63 yards. Now, you know, I tell you the other thing, I always get scared, though. Like, there were, because the one thing I noticed about Erie Provincetown, you'll hear Coach Graves say it this morning when we talk to him later, They're very physical up front, defensive linemen. Erie Provincetown, they're big. And I tell you, they hit, you know, they've clean hits. They blindsided Schweigen once, and I mean really hit him hard. And then the last play of the second quarter, Rockridge was trying to get down the field, and a shotgun snap went over Schweigen's head, and he got pounced on by one of their big linemen. And you always look at things like that. You're like, oh, man. But he was okay. But Schweigen last night, though, throwing the ball again, very efficient, 15 of 21, 286 yards, 3 touchdowns. And I know I say this ad nauseum, but for a sophomore, this is another game where he had 7 different receivers last night. 3 catches for Baylen Lehmans, Landon Wheatley, 3 catches, Liam Steele, 2 catches, including a 69-yard touchdown reception, Owen Steele, 3 catches for 45 yards, Trevor Dye, catch for 2 catches for 37 yards, and then the little Wheatley probably had the biggest catch of the game last night in the first half. It was a 7-0 game, and it was either a third down or fourth down at long play, and it was one of those plays where Schweigen extended the play again, didn't tuck the ball and run, and threw it downfield, and Wheatley got open for a 28-yard reception.
So that's Chase Wheatley.
Chase Wheatley.
All right. Awesome.
So big catch for him. And then you look at what the Rockets allowed last night defensively, 76 yards rushing, 27 yards passing, just one first down via the passing. They gave up five via the rushing. But again, I think coming into the game last night with the Larson kid not playing and the Keegan kid not playing, I think like 350 or maybe 400 some odd yards of total offense that didn't play in that game through the first
and if any team has their top two playmakers out, they're not going to beat Rock Ridge. I mean, that just is the fact of the matter. So, you know, for Erie Provincetown, again, like you said, a deceiving score in terms of you felt it was closer than it was. And honestly, like, it's deceiving because their two best players on offense weren't playing. So, you know, if they can get everybody back, and I know they've taken the lumps the last 2 weeks having to play Newman and Rock Ridge back to back, and that's a good transition into Mercer County, because they're probably two teams that feel a little bit differently in terms of momentum coming into that game next week between Mercer County and Erie Provincetown. But when you look at the team schedules, like, Mercer County has had the softer part of the division to play so far, and now they're ramping up to play the top teams with Newman and Rock Ridge coming up in the next couple of weeks after week five. And for Erie Provincetown, it's the opposite, where their division schedule starts with Newman and Rock Ridge, and now, you know, they kind of get the softer landing as they start kind of moving back down the teams in the pecking order down the rest of the way in the schedule. So I think it's a big game for both teams. And before we talk about that game next week, Mercer County last night, I thought, you know, played really well, especially defensively. They give up just 108 yards of total offense, and 73 of those yards were on one play, a 73-yard touchdown pass early in the game, late in the first quarter for Riverdale. But, you know, if you take that pass away, what, that's 35 yards of total offense that Riverdale had outside of the one touchdown pass they threw, just 2 yards rushing of net gain in the whole game, just three first downs Riverdale got. So Mercer County, you know, really kind of dominated that game. And even though it was close for maybe a quarter and a half, it felt like I don't think that, and I said this last night on the View from the West show too, I don't think Mercer County really ever was threatened in the game. Like, it you could tell pretty early on that they had Riverdale kind of overmatched, especially up front. But for Mercer County, you know, they were very balanced offensively. They finished with 190 yards rushing, 189 yards passing through the air. John Baldwin connected on two big passing touchdowns to Daylon Blazer. And then Mason Gray had another great night, 130 more yards and two more touchdowns on the ground. So for the Golden Eagles, like you said earlier, you know, I think it's really a good sign, because I thought after week one, you know, that was a poor performance, I think everybody would say. And then the way that week two started against Girard, I was, you know, really, I was like, oh man, I don't know how this is going to go this year with, you know, how the first five quarters have went. But since then, they've looked like a completely different team. And I know, you know, the competition necessarily hasn't been great the last 3 weeks by any stretch, but, you know, you can only play who's on your schedule, and you had to win those three games, and they were able to do it. So 3-1, the schedule now ramps up. The thing for Mercer County, though, is they have, you know, a soft landing in week 9 with a Mendota team that they'll beat. So, you know, you look at the next 4 weeks, you have to get one of them to make sure you're going to get into the playoffs. And I think, you know, they get progressively more difficult when you go Erie, Provincetown, Newman, Rock Ridge, Princeton. And like I was telling some people last night, I mean, it feels like, and it might sound, you know, maybe hyperbole or a little bit too much, but to me it feels like their playoff game is next week. If they win next week, they're in the playoffs, and if they lose to Erie Provincetown, I have a hard time seeing a path to five wins, because if you lose to Erie Provincetown, you know, then you have to beat Newman, Rock Ridge, or Princeton, who are probably maybe, you know, along with Monmouth Roseville, the three best teams in the league. So you know, the schedule gets more challenging now, and there are exciting matchups. I think the Erie Provincetown game next week has a lot of intrigue for both teams, because for Erie Provincetown, on the flip side, now they're 2-2, and their week 9 game is Princeton. So that's a game they're probably not going to win. So for them, you know, this is a huge game next week for them against Mercer County too. Brian Stocking pointed that out last night, by the way, the expert on all things. He's great to talk to. So yeah, next week is a big one for the Eagles and the Panthers, and but you know, things definitely trending in the right direction for Mercer County. Another solid performance from start to finish last night for the Golden Eagles.
Yeah, and
one more thing, Riverdale. I saw them last year. I saw them this year. They are a lot better, and they are still very young, and they've got a couple of players that are a good player, especially on defense. They had a freshman linebacker last night. I think his name was Brady Rogers. I don't have the roster in front of me, but he was made a bunch of tackles, and they have this sophomore defensive and offensive lineman that made a bunch of plays last night too. So they're a team that is definitely, you know, continuing to trend in the right direction. I know, and you know, JV scores, you can't, you know, they don't say a whole lot, but they've been kind of clobbering teams at the JV level this year too. So I think they're moving in the right direction. The numbers are up, and you know, a much improved team from a year ago, where again, you have to remember that's a program that two seasons ago canceled the whole season because they had 18 kids out. So it's a process to get competitive again, and they're taking steps forward. They're a lot better than they were last year.
And it's interesting for them next week. They play Orion at Orion. They still have Hall on their schedule, and they have Sherrard on their schedule, which should be competitive opportunities for them to pick up victories. I wanted to say, though, the funniest thing you told me last night off the air. I don't know if you shared this on the air yet about Rusty Dunn, who's doing sideline reports for us.
And I haven't. No.
And Guy Dierick's dad, Rockridge grad, right?
Yes, and
Guy
Dierick's assistant senior, for
his son
Riverdale. He's their coach in the press box.
So he went to Rock Ridge. Rusty Dunn is a Westmore grad, okay, who's co-owner of WMJ. Great. And by the way, Rusty Dunn is doing an excellent job on the sideline.
So,
take away, this is hilarious.
At halftime, you know, as Coach Dierick's in the booth is walking to go to the halftime, you know, locker room with Riverdale, he heard me say, you know, okay, because Coach Dierick's, the son, the head coach down on the sideline, did a halftime interview with us with Rusty last night. So he heard me say, you know, all right, let's go down to Rusty Dunn. He's got Guy Dierick's. And so he walks by, and then he comes back up, and we're in a commercial break, and he taps Monty. And he's like, hey, this is Guy Dierick's senior now, the assistant coach in the press box, Coach Dierick's dad. He's like, hey, he's like, if you get a chance, tell Rusty Dunn that Guy Dierick's from Rock Ridge is up in the press box, and he's like, I ran track against him in high school. He went to Westmer, and he was spot on. He was right. So I thought that was hilarious.
Have you told Rusty
Dunn? I haven't yet, because I didn't get a chance to. I need to text him maybe today or when I see him next.
That's
I might wait to tell him in person.
That's some clout for Rusty Dunn.
It's hilarious. Yeah, it was. I was laughing about that. That's an awesome story. So, yeah, it was. It's cool. And like I said, though, I have a lot of respect for Coach Dierick's and what he's been able to do, getting kids to come out and play. And, you know, they're a team that obviously I think they're still a year or two away because they're still so, so young. But they're moving in the right direction, man. I think next year that's a team, and in 2 years, too, that, you know, I think that's a team that you can say maybe is a playoff team in a year or two.
Well, and I think the other thing that you mentioned about the JV scores, but the night I was up there last week, they had their youth junior high football night, and there was an army of kids like out there. You know, they were announcing the kids. I mean, a ton of fifth and sixth grade and seventh and eighth grade kids. So yeah, they're definitely they're trekking upwards in the right direction.
Okay, so one more thing, and then we're gonna talk about Orion next to stay in the Rock Division, and we'll talk about Sherrard after that last night, but Aiden Sensabaugh was back, which is great to see. You mentioned that Riverdale's kicker, who's great, and he got a kick, one PAT, and he boomed it through the upright. So I remember, like, last year when I saw him for the first time in person, watching him in warm-ups. It was,
like,
he was incredible.
Kid?
Yeah. And he made a 52-yarder in warm-ups of the game I was at last year, and then he broke the school record with a 47-yarder in the game against Sherrard last year. But anyway, that's enough about Riverdale's kicker. Who also is the all-time leading goal-scoring leader at the school, too, in boys soccer. So, Aiden Sensabaugh, he's a fun kid to watch in two sports in the fall. But Orion last night falls to 1-3. They've now lost three games in a row on the road to Newman Central Catholic, 54-21. And I think that, you know, when you look at this game, it was 14-14 late in the first quarter. And then before the third quarter was over, it was 54-14 Newman. So kind of, you know, similar things the past 3 weeks for Orion and those losses to Monmouth, Roseville, Mercer County, and then Newman, they just have really struggled to get stops and have let the game kind of snowball on them and get away where, you know, I think they gave up 60 to Monmouth, Roseville, 56 to Mercer County, and then 54 to Newman again last night. And it sounded like it was a pretty balanced attack for Newman. They passed for 4 touchdowns in the game, which I think was a little surprising, but Coach Filler, we'll hear from him later. He, you know, said basically a lot that Newman was able to go to was working, obviously. So Comets get to 3-1. Their lone loss was to Princeton 28-14. But for Orion, you know, it's kind of gut check time, I guess, after 3 games that got away from you where you've had trouble getting stops. And now a Riverdale team that, even though they're 1-3 and have lost 3-2, I think the probably morale and momentum is a little bit more on their side of things going into that game next week against Orion. But that'll be a big one next week for the Chargers trying to get back on track against Riverdale. Because then the next week after that, they have to play Rock Ridge.
And then I was thinking about, you know, you got to look at their roster and we're approaching week 5. I mean, they're still in a pretty good place health-wise, with their 22 or 23 or 24.
They had 24 out, and Coach Filler in his interview said they had 22 playing last night. So 22, I mean, that's dangerously low.
No, yeah, no question. And you still got a lot of the season left. And, yeah, you know, you tee it up against Riverdale next week and you see what can happen. But, you know, and I think you look at, you know, those type of matchups like last night, you know, get off to a good start. You're running up and down the field. It's 14-14. You're just like, can we stop the Big Blue? What did he call them? The Big Blue Machine?
Machine. He said it's a classic Blue Machine team.
Did they go? Did he say much? Did they go? Did they stay in their spread or did they?
They kind of went back and forth a little bit.
Because that's what I'm really curious to see next week in the Newman Rockridge matchup. What brand of Newman football you see?
So Orion, their 2 scores in the first half were a 75-yard kickoff return from Owen Voorhees, who's I think returned 3 kicks for touchdowns this year already, and then an 86-yard touchdown pass. So the 2 scoring plays were big plays where maybe you could say those were kind of outliers as to how the game was actually going. And then, you know, Newman just kind of got rolling, and Coach Filler said pregame going into that game that they play like so downhill on both sides of the ball that they just fire off the ball and are so kind of stout as they always are up front and with their linebackers. So Newman, you know, you knew that was an unfavorable matchup for Orion going on the road to try and beat them with the way they play. So like you said, got to tee it up against Riverdale next week and try and turn things back around. So over to the Mississippi side of the track last night, Sherrard gets a win at home over Hall 20-14. Awesome win for the Tigers. I know the way the season started, their schedule so front-loaded with having to play Rock Ridge, then Mirko, then Princeton. And, you know, last week they go on the road and get thumped 60-0 and have a bunch of more kids get hurt where they have a very – I think last week he said they started with 29 kids in uniform and finished with less than that. And you know, so a lot of kids last night played – not at 100% after an 0-3 start, after losing 60-0, and they gut out a game against Hall, who had to be feeling good after they won last week. 20-14, the final score, Sherrard wins. I'm so happy for Coach Johnson and those kids because, you know, I've been around them a lot the last 2 seasons, and they really play so hard, and they are so well coached, and you know, they just haven't really got the bounces or the breaks, and it seems like they never do. But it just is, I'm so happy that they were able to get a win last night and to get to 1-3. And now game with Mendota next week that they should win. If they can get to 2-3, you can kind of reset yourself and say, okay, now we got to try and go 3-2 over the last, 5 weeks that in, or over the last, well, the, yeah, the last, that include games against, Orion and
Riverdale
are 3-1, I guess, over the last 4 weeks.
And then Kewaunee, remember, right. Riverdale had a chance against Kewaunee, so.
But got to take care of his next week. But right. I'm sure, you know, for you, same thing. Super happy for Coach Johnson and Sherrard. Carter Brown, 2 rushing touchdowns. Garrett Woodward, a big rushing touchdown of the game, too. And Eric Cutchins, when he sent me kind of the recap of the game, he said the biggest play that set up Sherrard's go-ahead score in the third quarter was a 75-yard pass play from Carter Brown to Jackson Jones.
Oh, awesome. I saw the picture of Coach Jones and his youngster on the field. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. To hear what was – did I haven't listened back in the archive. What was – I bet you Eric Hutchins was pretty wild.
I haven't listened back to it either, but I'm sure it was great. And Sherrard – Coach Johnson told a funny story off the air before I talked to him today, and he said that the last play of the game – so it was a – there was like a third and short play that – Sherrard had the ball in the final minute, and they were going to run the clock all the way down and call a timeout and then come out and run the play to try and, you know, get the yard to end the game, basically. And there was like some sort of miscommunication because they weren't going to snap it and just call a timeout. Well, they snapped it, and it went over Brown's head.
Oh, no.
So he had to chase it down and fall on it. And there's like 6 seconds left when he does that. So then they have to punt on fourth down, and he says they punt it, and Garrett Bubba was their punter, and he does a pretty good job. And he said, you know, he said off the top of his head, he's like, it might have been, like, with the roll, like a 65-yard punt that
Holy
the kid punts.
Cow.
So the ball's rolling, you know, it's not out of bounds, it's still in play, and he says we have, like, three or four kids that are, like, you know, hands raised, looking to the crowd, and he's like, meanwhile, on the far sideline, the Hall returner has it and is running it back down the sideline. So Coach Johnson said, he's like, I'm probably 15 yards on the field, like screaming and pointing that, you know, Hall's running the ball back, and he said, luckily we're able to, you know, get over there and make the tackle, but he said it was just kind of a wild, you know, final 15 seconds where it felt like, are we really going to find a
way
to
Where was
this?
The kid tackled at then?
I didn't ask him that. I should have asked him, but yeah, he said he was like just out on the field screaming, like, the kid's running the ball back, go tackle him. Because he said we got kids, you know, arms raised, yelling to the home crowd as they're turned away from the kid that's running down the sideline with the ball. So, but yeah, they're able to win, make the tackle. I told him that's all that matters. The final score is 20-14.
Well, and I think too, you talk about the front loaded schedule that they've had to play right off the bat. Now, imagine if they would have got Spring Valley Hall in week one and Mendota
right
in week two, and then they're heading in week three against Princeton.
Right.
Totally different mindset going into a situation like that. So a lot of times you're a victim of circumstance in terms of gaining a little momentum. Because, you know, when you have to play a physical team like Princeton, and then, you know, then you have to worry about, are we going to recover? Are we injured? And they were shorthanded in that game to begin with. And then to come back, to be quite honest, I think really a major tip of the cap to Coach Johnston and getting that team prepared after suffering some of the wounds you suffer against when you play Princeton and come back and you're able to beat them. And I tell you that, you know, got to do the job next week. That's you got to win that game at Mendota 2-3. And then, you know, take on a Monmouth-Roseville team that is one of the elite teams in the conference. So you look at just feeling really good about the Sherrard kids. There's no question about that.
And I love when they get to ring the bell. I think that's a fun tradition. And I like when they win road games because they come back and before they leave, they go out there in the dark and ring the bell. So I love the pictures of that after the game. So like I said, a much-deserved win. Very happy for Sherrard and Coach Johnson. They're now 1-3 with the winnable game coming up this week on the road at Mendota. Quickly, the rest of the conference on the Mississippi side last night. Princeton rolls over Kewaunee 44-15 as the Tigers are now 4-0. That was the 126th meeting between Princeton and Kewaunee last night. So they keep that traveling trophy. And then Monmouth-Roseville crushed Mendota 49-10. So I know on the Rock side of the conference next week, it's Rock Ridge and Newman. Both 2-0 in the division with, you know, basically the driver's seat of that side of the conference on the line. And then next week, Monmouth-Roseville gets to play Princeton at home. That should be an awesome crowd over at Coach Dobry Field next week. I'm excited to see how that Monmouth-Roseville-Princeton game matches or ends up, because I think the Titans definitely match up front with Princeton. I guess it'll come down to if they can get enough stops against that Princeton offense.
Yeah, that's going to be a great game. There's no question about that. And That what did you say that game's at?
It's at Monmouth-Roseville.
Oh, it's Sunny Lane Field. So yeah,
Coach Dobry Field.
Yeah. Well, whatever they call Sunny Lane Drive or whatever it is, Warren Dobry Field.
Yep, that's what it's called.
And you know, Princeton, just what they've been able to accomplish the last, you know, ever since Coach Pearson has been there. I mean, they've just become the measuring stick.
Yep.
In the league, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago, you know, about what it's take what it's taken to eliminate them in postseason play, who their season has come to an end against.
Yep.
You know, that's the unfortunate part of, you know, two parochial powers in IC Catholic and Montini and Byron. Those are the right. teams that have beat them in the playoffs the last 5 years and
they've
in pretty competitive
they've
games.
Been competitive games. Like, I know they took IC Catholic to overtime when Tegan Davis was a senior, and yeah, I mean, they've played with Montini and they've played with Byron. It takes, you know, the best programs in the state to knock them out. So, you know, definitely the biggest test for Monmouth-Roseville of the season is next week against Princeton. And I think, you know, Princeton defensively is so, so stout. So we'll see if the Titans are able to move the ball on the ground very well against them or not. So it's crazy. We're through 4 weeks in the Three Rivers Athletic Conference, and I think kind of two of the bigger games of the whole season in terms of the conference races are next week with Newman against Rock Ridge, and then, as we said, there, Monmouth-Roseville and Princeton.
Yeah, and always interesting when you have the opportunity. Here comes somebody walking down the street with a WMJ shirt on that I have idea who it is.
Yep, doesn't matter.
You'll hear Coach Graves saying this about, you know, the factor of playing on artificial turf in the middle of the season when you haven't played on artificial turf at all this year. So they play at Roscoe Wheat Stadium, Sterling Public High School, against Newman Central Catholic next Friday night. And Coach Graves, two stints there at Rock Ridge. I think his first stint 6 years, second stint now I think in his third. But, you know, early in his tenure, every year, week one was Rock Ridge and Sterling Newman Central Catholic, wow. and they were both loaded with talent in those years, and they were always great games. And this game next Friday should live up to that similar type hype between Newman and Rock Ridge. And then the other thing, I'm surprised Newman hasn't. I know they're getting votes, but I'm surprised they're not in the top 10 in 1A. And rankings are what they are, they played competitively against Princeton in week one.
They're in my top 10 when I vote, and there are not 10 1A teams better than Newman, so there aren't.
And just speaking of, like, around the state, last night I was looking at the 2A ranking, so what happened last night. And I want to know a little bit more about Farmington, because they have really been rolling teams. So yeah. Moroa Forsyth last night, the number one ranked team in 2A, they won 67-30 over the Porta Blue Jays to go to 4-0. Farmington throttled Bureau Valley last night, 54-6. The Farmers ranked number two. It looks like the big game in that league is going to be Farmington-Macomb. I'm not sure when they play. Moments, they're ranked number three in 2A. They beat Hoopston area Cornjerkers 48-14. And here's the interesting score last night. We talked about this from the view from the west. Quincy Notre Dame is ranked number four in 2A, so you wonder, are they going to be, if they split the state in half, they going to be the southern half of the state, or are they going to be the northern half of the state? And I think most people in the listening area say, please let them be in the southern half
of
the state.
Same with Moroa Forsyth.
Yeah. After last night, Quincy Notre Dame beat Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin. Yeah, that parochial school. 37-7 last night was the Quincy
Notre
Dame win.
And mind you, Quincy Notre Dame, they're 2-1. They lost to Quincy, who's a 7A power. So, yes, that's a team that they will have some losses. But Quincy Notre Dame, in my AP vote this year or this week, I voted them 2 because I don't think that, quite frankly, I don't know if any other 2A team is going to beat Sacred Heart Griffin. I know they're not, you know, the traditional power Sacred Heart Griffin, but to beat that program by 30 with a school that's, a, you know, 2A enrollment size is pretty impressive. So,
and then the Rock Ridge Rockets ranked 5 in the AP poll. Of course, they won 41-0 last night. Johnson City in Southern Illinois, they beat the Fairfield Mules 44-26. They're ranked 6th. Coley Welter at Monticello, he knocks off Bloomington Central Catholic 28-25, the Saints number 7 in 2A. Bismarck, Kenning, Rossville, Elvin, they've had some success in the southern part of the state the last few years. They beat Iroquois West 50-8. Chester 49-2 over Sparta. Sparta got a safety in that game. And then Arthur, Lovington, Atwood, Hammond, Terry Bewley, may he rest in peace, can always say that school better than anybody.
Arthur A. Lovington, that's how he said it.
38-7. But then, you know, and we'll do it in all the coaching you know, the coaching staffs, you know, they don't pay attention about necessarily the matchups. But, you know, the one thing you always look at when you talk about seeding in the playoffs, there can be those schools, especially the small schools, that have a very competitive schedule and play a lot bigger schools during the regular season. And they have more talent and have a lot of talent probably. And so Bloomington Central Catholic now, they lose last night.
They have two losses.
Drop two and two.
Yeah.
And you look at the rest of their schedule, they still got to play St. Joe Ogden and Tolono Unity.
Yeah.
Tolono Unity, by the way, lost last night to Altoff Catholic 53-52.
Yeah, I think Central Catholic will have four losses.
So that's a potential where you look at.
Yeah, someone who's 9-0 is going to play a very good team.
The Farmington Farmers.
Right. Because, again, like, and I don't mean any disrespect to Farmington, right, when I say this, but if you put Farmington playing Bloomington Central Catholic schedule, what's Farmington's record?
Yeah.
Probably 5-4 or 6-3 maybe, right? So that's those games are more evenly matched than you think because, again, you know, and I'm sure Farmington would be the first people to admit this, too. Like Central, and I'm not saying that is definitely going to be the first round matchup, but Bloomington Central Catholic's regular season schedule is infinitely more challenging than Farmington's, right? Infinitely. You probably can't even quantify how much more challenging it is. So, you know, that's the thing where, again, and you see that, I know, like, the one year that we always talk about here is Orion went 9-0 back in, what, the early to mid-2000s, and, you know, John Hoshide always says, he's like, that's a team that was, like, a state title contender, and they had to play, at the time, Immaculate Conception. They're now IC Catholic, and they were 5-4 and had to like kick a field goal at the end to get into the playoffs. 2-point
conversion on a PAT,
or they would have went 4-5. They go 5-4, and then they come down to Orion and beat them by what 50, and then they beat everybody by 50 in the playoffs and win the state title. Right. So, again, that's the thing you have to follow is like, you know, sometimes those teams that have 3-4 losses, they've played teams that they would beat every other team in the 2A field, you know, if they played them. So
speaking of that, so I was looking at Quincy Notre Dame's schedule. All right.
Yeah.
So here are the enrollments of the schools they play.
Yeah.
1,876 with Quincy. 572 Richmond Burton. They beat 22-10. Springfield Southeast, 1,223. Sacred Heart Griffin, 884. That's a multiplied enrollment. Springfield, 1,479. Springfield Lamphere, 1,113. Jacksonville, 882. Lincoln, 814. Decatur MacArthur, 1,145 students. That's the level of competition that Quincy Notre Dame is playing. And then, you know, some of the they're non-conference games. Richmond Burton, who's had really good success through the years, and Quincy are their non-conference games. So that's a 2A opponent you're looking at. And then also in the north half, you said it, so Wilmington ranked number 2 right now in 3A, but as
a border
3A, 2A,
yeah.
They won last night 49-13 over Piatown. So you look at where the north-south split is, and you have the potential for some teams in the north to have crooked number losses, like UND with their schedule, and definitely Bloomington Central Catholic. You know, a potential first round matchup if you finish 8-1 or 9-0.
Those would not be fun games to go 9-0 and be rewarded having to play one of those teams. So, yep, I agree with you.
So that's the scoreboard, and we buried the lead with the Illini last night. We picked up the tail end of that game.
Awesome.
And the Illini get the win over.
Huge win.
And the one thing I like about, you know, Coach Bielema is, you know, he's really reached out to the coaching high school football coaching community. In Illinois, I think there's a lot of buy-in, and we know that, you know, at nauseam we've spoken about his small school roots at Prophetstown, and just really cool emotion last night with him after the game, and you know, picking up that such a huge win, and to win in that environment last night, and I think Nebraska
they never win games like that, Illinois never. So that's
awesome.
That's
two this year where they've beat top 25 opponents, and their record in the last 15 years against top 25 teams was like 3-15 or something.
Right.
So they've won back to back, but to go there and win in that environment, especially the way the Nebraska fans. And they've always been great at selling out Lincoln, but, you know, they're off to a 3-0 start. And that was a rabid environment, and Nebraska coming off that win over Colorado and Deion Sanders to really get that win early in the Big Ten season is so awesome. And I tell you, man, if there's a guy that can win on the road, I think, you know, I'm not going to say we're headed for Indy just yet in early December, but
no, that's not happening.
I tell you, that was to steal a win on the road like that, and you're probably right, it's not going to happen. And then, you know, the scheduling gods are against Illinois, too. They go back-to-back against Nebraska and Penn State right. on the road.
So. And one other quick thing about that before we get to our head coaches' interviews this morning. The other thing, too, for them to win that game, you know, as a national audience, is Friday night game. There's really no other college football games going on. The college football audience is all watching that game. I think that means a lot, too, to kind of make a statement like that against Nebraska. So awesome win for the Illini. Bring on the Nittany Lions next week. And it's a night game next week, too, in Happy Valley, I believe. So that'll be a crazy environment there, I'm sure.
Well, is Penn State there? They rolled everybody. Who are they playing today in the Big Ten?
I don't know that off the top of my head. I'll have to get my scouting report ready.
Nobody cares about Big Ten football because we're all in for the Three Rivers Athletic Conference. And then, all the information on the site with all of the track stuff. By the way, some of the other headlines. Congratulations to the Rock Ridge Girls Golf Program.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
4 years in a row for the Rock Ridge Girls Golf Program. Pretty impressive run, and they just consistently put up great numbers.
Yep. 4 years in a row in winning the conference championship in girls golf for Rock Ridge, and quickly, I believe the boys golf conference meet in the track is this week. That's because we do this every week for football. Can we give our picks for who's going to win the boys golf conference in the track this year? Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first, or do we want to say it at the same time? Let's do it at the same time. I'm going to count. Ready? 1, 2, 3, Riverdale.
Yeah. Well, and they have the potential, right, to win a state title.
Yes, I mean, they were the runner-up last year.
They are a machine with the success and the talent and really the numbers they have put up. And the one-time owner of former Hawthorne Ridge, Chuck Fizer, was a proud member of the Riverdale Golf Program and a state champ. Now, Carson Bowens from Mercer County, did I see shot a 31 at Oakview? Was that a couple weeks ago?
I think so. Probably.
You report on so many numbers.
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head. A lot of golf scores I look at each day. So.
All right. And, I've been in a lot of volleyball here recently with the youngest playing volleyball. Man, I tell you, I didn't realize, and I know nothing about volleyball other than its rally scoring. But I didn't realize how long those games take.
Even get me started.
Well, and everybody, Brian Roosh and I were talking about this last week, it's the only sport anywhere now
right.
that has three levels.
Right.
It's the only sport where it's freshman, JV, varsity.
Right.
And I don't care if your enrollment's like 150 kids.
I know.
You still have three levels.
Yeah. It is a lot. So we have our head coaches interviews to get to. Also, quickly about volleyball, we're not going to talk about it anymore because we've already went way over time again. But Mercer County is hosting the Judy Richmond Classic today, tournament going on in Aledo throughout the day. Games got underway at 8 o'clock this morning. So, all right, we will talk to our four local head coaches again this week. In this order, we'll hear from Tanner Matlick with Mercer County, then Brandon Johnson at Churara, Chip Filler at Orion, then we'll close with Rock Ridge head coach Sam Graves, and then you and Brian Roosh have something to talk about later as well. So, all right, we'll come back and hear from Tanner Matlick next on WRMJ.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it. Because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
This summer, save on Saucony at 6140RUN. Saucony Select running shoes are clearance priced at just $80. Plus, running apparel and clothing from Saucony is 25% off. Saucony running shoes are built to keep you stable and comfortable and are as reliable as they get. And they feature crave-worthy cushioning. So stop in at 6140RUN and pick up a pair of Saucony running shoes for $80 or save on Saucony running apparel and clothing at 25% off at 6140RUN on West Main across from the library in Galesburg.
And this is Ty Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Sportsline continues this morning. We're talking now with Mercer County Golden Eagles head coach Tanner Matlick. Mercer County now off to a 3-1 start, winners of three straight after a 36-7 win over Riverdale last night. And I know, Coach Matlick, when we talked post-game last night, you said even with a 36-7 final, you felt a little frustrated with the performance. Do you still kind of feel that way this morning, or has that subsided a little bit?
No, I think that subsided a little bit. You turn the film on, and I think there was a lot of things we did really well last night. I think the frustration just comes from multiple weeks in a row, just leaving points on the field offensively. Overall, I think it was a good performance by our kids, and just really happy to get the 3-1 and keep this thing rolling.
Yeah, defensively, we talked about a little bit last night too, but you allowed just 7 points, and it was basically on one big pass play. It was basically Riverdale's entire offensive output. You finish up giving up just 108 yards of total offense, 2 yards rushing in the game, and then, like we said, one play was a 73-yard touchdown. So if you take that away, I mean, you're hanging around 30-ish yards allowed the whole game. So just overall defensively from top to bottom, a pretty good performance last night, especially after giving up, you know, 41 in a win a week ago to Orion. So do you feel like you took a step forward on that side of the ball last night?
Yeah, I think we were solid defensively. I think our front four played really well. They were disruptive. They were violent with their hands, and then that allowed our five linebackers we played last night to flow in space and fill their gaps and fly around and make plays in the run game. So yeah, I think it was a good night for us defensively. For the most part, we played fundamentally sound football, assignment sound football. And that's what happens when all 11 guys are doing their job on defense. And you face a team like that that likes to pound the rock, and you just have to prepare for that during the week. And I thought we did a good job of that this week.
Well, and staying on the defensive side of the ball, we talked about this pregame with you before the game yesterday too. You know, Riverdale's a really unique team to prepare for with the way they play offensively. And I know you touched on it pregame where it feels like, you know, you've gone from week to week to week to week through weeks 1 through 4 with completely different offenses you're having to prepare to play against. So how have the kids handled that process? I know for like high school kids, you know, you can kind of worry about if they're going to be able to maybe grasp some of these concepts, but defensively, you know, you've probably had to throw a lot at them each week in a short amount of time. So overall, how do you think they've kind of handled that with the different looks you've had to face so far?
I think really well. I think we got a couple good senior leaders on that side of the ball with Peyton and Bodie there in the middle, and then Dalen on the back end, who didn't get a ton of run defensively last night just because of the offense we were facing. But we got a group of guys there that have seen a lot of different styles of offense, and for them to adjust during the week and lead our younger guys in those adjustments, I think we've handled it really well. And we've been able to do some things on the defensive side that maybe we haven't done in the past years, with some stunning, some twisting, bringing some pressure, and just trusting our guys to fly around and make plays. So I think that side of the ball is really taking on the challenge this year of facing some teams we haven't traditionally faced and getting ready for those offenses week in and week out.
All right, and another strong night for you offensively. You finish with just under 400 yards of total offense, really balanced, you know, 190 yards rushing, 189 yards through the air. And I think, you know, coming into the season and throughout the early part of the year too, you could tell the rushing offense was there. And last night, I think, was the best you've looked from start to finish throwing the ball, as John Baldwin finishes with 189 yards and 2 touchdown passes through the air, connected on a couple of big pass plays to Dalen Blazer. So passing-wise, how do you like the progression there now as you get ready to head into Week 5?
Yeah, I think John did a good job again last night of managing the offense, taking the big plays and executing when they were there. Just have to do a better job of eliminating turnover. And I talked to him last night about some of the plays we made where he's really, really good in some situations. And then, you saw a couple times last night where he kind of just put the ball up for grabs, one at the end of the half. So that's kind of, we were just taking a shot at the end zone, but, there was a couple times there where he was under a little bit of pressure, kind of hit his panic button instead of like trying to scramble out of the pocket. He threw one up for grabs and we just can't have that, in the bigger game. So, it's a learning curve for him. He's still, this is his, it was his fourth varsity start last night. But overall really happy with how he's played early on this season and excited to watch that kid progress throughout the next 2 years.
Well, yeah. And I think too, you know, we talk a lot so far this season about kind of how you've been able to control the line of scrimmage offensively. And a lot of that we talk about is with run blocking, but I think even in pass protection, you know, you're giving him, at least last night, it felt like a lot of time to throw the ball where I know there were a couple times where he kind of, you could tell he kind of looked off of his first option, still had time to kind of settle in and make a throw to the number two or number three look on the play. So another, I think, pretty strong night for you up front. Is that what you saw last night too?
Yeah. Yeah. When we give John time, he's, I've said it before, I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. I'd take him, you know, all 9 weeks in the regular season and then hopefully those bonus games in the postseason. So, I think our O-line did a great job again last night of protecting through the first 4 weeks of the season. I don't know how many sacks we've given up. It can't be very many with John's ability to move, and reset the pocket and then our O-line, how they're able to protect. So it was a good night for the guys up front again last night in the run game and pass protection. And, I think overall, again, we left some points on the board, but, pretty good night for us offensively, staying balanced.
And then maybe just one negative from last night is it felt like you got penalized a lot. I think we had you for 11 penalties for 95 yards, and it felt like there were five or maybe even more kind of pre-snap penalties on offense. So is that something you saw there that you can kind of clean up to eliminate that?
Yeah, we had I think, gosh, three or four false starts and then a few holding penalties, and it felt like they kind of happened in flurries where – you know, we'd be pretty clean for a quarter and then we'd get into a series where we have a few mental mistakes in a row where we're either false starting or holding and then those compile and you get behind the chains and it's, you know, all of a sudden you look out there and it's second and 20 or second and 25 or, just way behind the chains and off schedule. So we have to eliminate that. And that starts with me having our kids, be disciplined in practice good habits. You know, we can't go out there and hold in practice and then expect to not get called for it in games. So. Got to do a better job on that front for sure.
All right, and just kind of looking around the conference for you, I know we, you know, it's been 4 weeks of the season at this point. Next week will be over the halfway point. So have you been able to get much of a read kind of outside of your own team? I know it's hard to kind of maybe look around when you're in the middle of the season, but what's your kind of read overall on the conference so far through 4 weeks if you have much of one?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's still pretty early in the season, but the biggest thing I've noticed is there's, you look at the scores week to week and some scores you can kind of predict and then other scores, there's quite a bit of parity in the conference where you look at like the Kewaunee Riverdale score from a few weeks ago. And then you look at how Kewaunee played against Monmouth Roseville and you just kind of scratch your head and wonder what happened in those types of games. And I think the cream will rise to the top and, there's a lot of good teams in this conference. And I think it's kind of shaking itself out where we're seeing who's the real contenders going down the home stretch. And, hopefully we're in that conversation come week nine.
Hey, you talk about kind of the contenders in the conference. That's a good segue to what I want to talk about. Now, I think when, you know, you looked at the schedule, when you got it back, you know, in March or April or whenever it was that it came out, you probably looked at, you know, weeks 5, 6, 7, and 8 as kind of the, I don't know if you necessarily want to say make or break, but that's kind of where, you know, it's going to figure out how the season's going to go with these games to start with Erie Providence on next week. So just what's your feeling as you look down the line at, you know, I think four challenging games against Erie Providence, Newman, Rock Ridge, and then Princeton?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're exactly right. When we get the schedule or got the schedule back earlier this year, those four games are four games that you look at and you say, we have to be ready to play in those four ball games and we have to be at our peak in those four ball games. So going into this stretch, the kids have gotten the message all year long. This is going to be the toughest stretch in the schedule. They know what's coming up and we're going to be ready for it.
All All right, and just a brief kind of scouting report that you have on Erie Prophetstown, if you have much of one yet. I know last night they fell to Rock Ridge 41-0 in a game where basically their top two offensive playmakers didn't play due to injury. So what's your read on an Erie Prophetstown team that is 2-2 coming into week five?
Yeah, they're a tough ball club. I mean, they play physical. They got some size up front, especially across the defensive line. I would argue this is probably the best defensive line we faced all year long. Just size, physicality, relentless effort, relentless pursuit on the defensive side of the football. And then offensively, they do some nice things as well. So it's another week of game we need to have going into that stretch of four games. And our kids just have to be ready to roll. Like I said, it's a good ball club. They're fast. They're physical. They fly around and make plays. So have to have a good week of preparation this week and get ready to roll for Friday night.
All right, that's head coach of the Mercer County Golden Eagles, Tanner Matlett. Golden Eagles 3-1 on the season after a 36-7 win over Riverdale at home last night. Coach, thanks for talking with us this morning, and we'll see you later in the week getting ready to play Erie Prophetstown.
All right, thanks, Ty.
And I'm Ty Taylor on WRMJ.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands of the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Start cross-country season off right with a stop at 6140 Run in Galesburg. Build your endurance with a pair of Saucony cross-country spikes. Plus, save during the Hey Dude Shoes closeout sale. Don't fall for the online fakes. Get pairs of Hey Dude Shoes for as low as $40 and boots for as low as $65. This is your sign to get moving. Visit 6140 Run in Galesburg today.
This is Ty Taylor back on Sportsline this morning, talking now with head coach of the Sherrard Tigers, Brandon Johnson. Tigers getting the win column in 2024 with a 20-14 win at home over Hall on homecoming last night. Coach Johnston, I know we've talked a lot about kind of how the season has started, unfortunately, with three losses and kind of a almost feels like an avalanche of injuries you've had to deal with, but a nice win last night to notch the first win on the season. So I guess how rewarding did it feel for you and the kids to be able to ring the bell at Clifford King Field last night and get to 1-3?
Yeah, good morning, Ty. Thanks again for having me, and it was awesome. This is awesome for our kids. You know, coming off those first 3 weeks against three really good teams, you know, we honestly felt pretty good about our kids' mindset, but certainly that was in the back of our heads. You know, are we really going to be mentally prepared? Are we really going to battle and stuff like that? So, just really happy for our kids you know, they stayed true to the process and, kept fighting, and it took literally every second off the clock last night, but they got a win and it was well deserved for them.
Well, yeah, that's the thing too. You talked about how you don't necessarily you aren't sure how, you know, your kids are going to really be mentally after a start like that. And I know, like we touched on 0-3 and, you know, last week against a great Princeton team, 60-0 was the final score. And you have a lot of kids that are playing that aren't 100%. So to me, you know, from the outside, you look in and you say, this is probably a recipe for kids to kind of pack it in and be like, well, this just kind of isn't our year. But obviously that's not what happened. So I'm sure to you got to be pretty proud of the kids. And I think it says a lot about, you know, everyone in the program to be able to, you know, pick yourself up and get a win.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it speaks to the resilience of our kids and, you know, their commitment to this team and the program and the year that they're still dedicated to try to make the best of it. You know, like I said, it's a really great group of kids. They're pretty close knit, I think. It's something that they've worked really hard for. I'm happy to see them do it. It was a homecoming win for us last night. I'm not even sure when the last time was. We maybe won a homecoming game. Maybe it's been recent. I'm not sure, but, you know, it's just a lot of things, a lot of factors that played into it, made it a pretty special night for our kids.
All right, so the final score, 20-14 last night. Can you kind of walk us through what ultimately allowed you to get the win? It looked like the scoring was back and forth throughout the night, a lot of lead changes, but you were able to hold on to the end. So what were the keys to pulling out the win last night?
Yeah, you know, I think,
you know, offensively, we did kind of just enough. It wasn't a great performance offensively, but we, you know, we scored just enough. We got just enough done. We were having quite a bit of success running the football last night, which was great to see. That's been a, you know, big emphasis. We knew that we needed to be able, and we wanted to be able to run the ball coming into the year. Obviously with Carter and Garrett and Lane back there in the backfield for us. And coming into the season, at least when we were healthy, we thought that was going to be a strength of ours up front. So, you know, it's been tough sledding here, obviously the first 3 weeks, but, last night we really ran the ball effectively and got the ball in a lot of guys' hands doing it. So, overall, pretty good game, offensively last night. I thought our defense played really, really well. We gave up two big plays, one of them for a touchdown and one of them that got them close and set up a touchdown. And outside of those two big plays, I thought our defense was excellent last night. So, you know, the way we struggled, obviously, on both sides of the ball the first 3 weeks against some pretty good teams. But thought we really put things together last night and took a massive step forward.
Well, yeah, and that's something I wanted to touch on with you on the defensive side of the ball, too, is I know last week you gave up 60 points, and of course it's Princeton, so, you know, it's the best team on your schedule. But to flip that to just giving up 14 this week, you said it felt like you took a big step forward last night, and I know obviously they're different opponents, but specifically defensively, what'd you like this week maybe that wasn't there last week against Princeton?
You know, I didn't really say anything to anybody, but I think it honestly started throughout the week and in our pregame. I really felt like our kids were dialed in this week. I thought our coaches did a great job with a game plan this week, and it really put our kids in position to be their best and to play fast. And I think that's one of the biggest keys, of course, defensively. You know, you got to be able to tackle, of course, but you got to be able to get there first. So our kids were in positions where they could play fast. I think we simplified things and simplified some of their reads for them this week, and really thought that we were a really fast defensive team last night. So. That's probably the biggest thing that I kind of noticed and was obviously very pleased with.
And something that I know we talked about kind of with you over the past couple of years is like when you try to get things going in the right direction in a program, you know, learning to win games is something you have to do. Where last night, I know there was no scoring for either team in the fourth quarter. It was 20-14 through three. That ends up being the final score. So you're able to find a way to win, getting some defensive stops last night. So I know that probably had to feel pretty good too, being able to find a way to win to get to, you know, your first win of the year.
Yeah, and that's kind of the best way to describe it. I think we found a way to win last night, and you know, we put ourselves in a kind of some crazy situations the last couple minutes of the game and almost found a way to lose it, but you know, again, our kids stayed resilient, we found a way to win finally. So you know, I felt pretty good at 20-14. Obviously I didn't feel great. You know, we're 0-3 and we'll take every chance we can get, but just the way our defense was playing last night, I really felt pretty good, because we've been able to run the ball effectively on offense for the most part, and we're able to play pretty good defensively. I was just obviously hoping that we could prevent another big play from happening at that time, but you know, some crazy things happened there at the end, but our guys held on and we got the win.
All right, and I know when we were kind of coming into the season, as you've touched on, you knew that the first 3 weeks were going to be very challenging. But then, you know, if you look at the schedule and you look at weeks 4 and 5, you probably say, okay, we have a chance here to kind of pick ourselves up off the mat and turn things around to try and build some momentum down the final third of the regular season. So I think another game next week against Mendota that definitely is winnable for you. So what's the message, I guess, heading into this week, preparing for another game that you have, I would say, a pretty good chance to win this next weekend?
Yeah, more of the same, I think. You know, keep focusing on the things that we need to do to improve. You know, obviously the schedule, you know, a little bit different playing Hall and then Mendota as opposed to Princeton. I mean, I don't, and that's no disrespect, of course, anybody else. It's just nobody really matches up to Princeton. So, you know, yeah, we think we've got another winnable game. Obviously for us, our key is, you know, we obviously have to play well. And we're not good enough to beat anybody probably if we don't play well. So, and I think our kids know that and understand that, but I also think that they understand that they're going to be in another position where if they play well, they got a shot to win another game next week. So, you know, judging off the attitude, the effort, the focus that we had the last handful of days this week in practice and then our execution last night, I think our kids will be excited for another chance.
All right, that's head coach of the Sherrard Tigers, Brandon Johnson, joining us. Tigers are 1-3 after a 20-14 win over Hall last night. Coach Johnson, thanks for talking with us, and congrats on win number one.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
And I'm Ty Taylor. We're back with more on WRMJ after this.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
This summer, save on Saucony at 6140 Run. Saucony Select running shoes are clearance priced at just $80. Plus, running apparel and clothing from Saucony is 25% off. Saucony running shoes are built to keep you stable and comfortable, and are as reliable as they get. And they feature crave-worthy cushioning. So stop in at 6140 Run and pick up a pair of Saucony running shoes for $80. Or save on Saucony running apparel and clothing at 25% off at 6140 Run on West Main across from the library in Galesburg.
And this is Ty Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Back on Sportsline, we're talking now with head coach of the Orient Chargers, Chip Filler. Chargers fall to 1-3 with a 54-21 loss to Newman last night. And I know Coach Filler at one point, I think late in the first quarter, it was 14-14. And then I think Newman put up 40 in a row to get it to 54-14. So just a little bit about how it got away from you last night on the road against a really good Newman team.
Well, I don't know how to say how it got away, to be quite honest with you. You're 14-14. They do a good job, but they come down and they score in the ensuing drive to make it 21-14. We answer. We have fourth and one, I believe, inside the 15 or inside, it might have been inside the 10. I'm not quite sure. No, it wasn't inside the 10 because we probably kicked the field goal. Inside the 15. And we can't pick up a yard and a half, you know, and that was pretty disheartening. We get a stop. We drive it down again, or inside the red zone, and have to, and then turn it over on downs. So it's not like we, and then the wheels really came off. They have a long run, I think an 80-yard run, and then we're coming out, and Kale throws an interception right before the half. They score again, then they get the ball to start the second half. They score again. You know, it's just one of those sequences, like the same thing though with Mercer County when they score at the end of the half. And then they get the ball to start the half. I mean, they've just ultimately stolen a possession there from you, and they just started rolling that way. But, you know, our kids' is credit. They keep fighting. They keep doing everything they need to do to win. Some uncharacteristic things, you know, Kale had two picks. One was, I thought was really bad right before the half. And then the second one, in the fourth quarter, he was trying to make a play on first down. We were getting ready to score again. And, you know, just a dumb throw, really. And he knows that. He came back and he's like, I'm trying to make a play. And that's usually when mistakes happen for quarterbacks, is when they're pressed and they're trying to make a play. They're trying to do a little bit too much. And I think maybe there at the end, that's what he was trying to do. Then we have a fumble going in again. God, maybe this is the recurring thing. Our turnovers all happen at the most inopportune times. We're going in, Aiden Fisher's going in maybe untouched, and the ball slips out of his hands. I mean, it's just one really so.
And I know we talked about it coming into the game with you pregame yesterday, is, you know, you felt when you saw Newman's wishbone look they put out there, you said, you know, it kind of concerns you, and it looked like, though, they ended up throwing for four touchdowns last night. So just offensively for Newman, defensively for you, I mean, what was it that beat you? Was it just kind of everything, passing, running? How did they put up 54?
Well, they did. They came out in the wishbone like we thought they would, and tried to run it on us. Really did. But then they went out into there, and this is there to their credit. I don't know who's running the offense over there, if DeVay is or what. But they came out and they went to their spread look, or their, you know, I call it the Sterling, their offense that they have there, and they saw the coverage we were playing. We were playing zero, and they really just said, okay, let's fine. Let's just see what we can do. Cause if you're playing zero coverage, that's just basically how you beat it. And we weren't real good at it. This is the first time in 25 years that we have ever played this coverage. We felt like it was the best game plan for us to stop their run, and we did. But then as we did that, and we thought, well, if we get in a throw, we're okay. Well, we got to throw it, and we weren't okay. Our defensive backs just, you know, had a rough time with their receivers, and the quarterback, who wasn't extremely accurate, but, you know, accurate enough to throw four touchdowns on us. So, it was a great schematic. I thought it was a great adjustment by them. You know, to what we were doing. I'm sure that they have seen this before, so they knew exactly how to handle it. And, they just got us. I mean, I thought the game plan to stop the wishbone was good. I mean, I felt like we could really do that, but then, and try to push him into this spread, kind of the receivers look, and then they were able to do that. So I was really impressed with them in that regard.
All right. And, you know, just speaking about Newman now, I know, like, for our listening audience, Rock Ridge has them, next week, and then Mercer County has them in a couple of weeks. So just what was kind of your read on Newman? How good do you think this Newman team is now, having played them and seeing them up close?
I believe they're pretty good. I think the race and on our side of the track will run through those three teams that you just mentioned. I just have not seen Rock Ridge at all. I mean, I can only imagine how good they are and what they're doing to people. I guess I'll see them on tape here in a week or so. But, you know, seeing Mercer County and seeing Newman, I mean, you're talking about a one touchdown difference probably between the two of them. Depending on where that's played, you have two story tradition. You know what it's going to be like here. I'll be honest with you, Ty. Because Kale was watching this in study hall the other day, it's going to be like that first round game that they had with them. I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago. How that game went is probably how the next matchup will go, to be totally honest with you. The special teams I knew were a big deal because I was watching punt returns get done, and that's the one thing if you're really concerned with and you want to beat Newman, you've got to win that aspect of the game. I felt like in the first time in about five games with them that we really did win the special teams aspect of the game, but we didn't win the other two. So I think that might be the difference, to be totally honest with you.
All right. And for you, I know, you know, you probably felt good after week one, and then three straight have gotten away from you here. So just overall, I mean, how do the kids feel like they're handling it? I know you got a game against Riverdale this coming week that you probably feel like you should be able to win. So just what's the morale like, I guess, after, you know, now on a three game losing streak?
You know, I think there's a lot of frustration, you know, from us. You know, we've got guys that should be playing better and that are not. And hopefully this is, you know, this is the wake up call. I mean, this 3 week stretch is very, very tough, you know, with starting with Monmouth and then Mirko and Newman. Really the way it looks though, and to be honest with you, and I guess, Riverdale's so much improved and they've got a lot of great things going on over there. They got their kids, they've got their numbers up. They have a great parent group that's like their sophomores and freshmen. That's where their numbers are, and super supportive. And that makes a huge difference, you know, and getting kids out and getting those numbers up and drawing excitement. So, I mean, they are much improved. I mean, this is going to be a tough game. And, you know, I mean, I don't sugarcoat anything. This is the way it is. And either you toughen up and battle through it, or this is going to continue to escalate. And I do think the frustration is set in. I think last night was very frustrating to some of our guys, especially like how they played. Like they should have played better. Like our stars should have played better. You know, I think Owen had a very good game, you know, running back kicks and catching the ball. And he ended up having to play defense last night. That's a new thing for him. And Jake Mainbridge played well, you know, but off and on, you know, off the top of my head, you know, we played it. I mean, everybody else was like average at best. Even, you know, my son was average at best, and he knows this. We can't have our stars not be stars if we're gonna even be in games. And I expect them to bounce back. I expect them to take on that challenge, just like they've taken on every challenge. you know, like LAM, you know, it's not cool to play football anymore at Orion or whatever the case is. And some of their classmates have quit and are standing on the sidelines and watching and really watching all of this and probably thinking, so yeah, I'm glad I'm not here, right? Cause it's, but these 22 guys have come out, they've stuck together and I anticipate them to battle back and be in good spirits with homecoming week. And, you know, it should be a fun week here at Orion that way. So, you know, bring them on, I guess. You know, we got to take everybody's best. And we definitely need, this is a definitely winnable game and we definitely need it for us.
All right. That's head coach of the Orion Chargers, Chip Filler. Chargers fall to 1-3 with a loss to Newman last night, looking ahead to a matchup with Riverdale on homecoming this coming Friday for Orion. Coach Filler, thanks for talking with us this morning and best of luck in the coming week against Riverdale.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy.
Yep. And I'm Ty Taylor. We're back with more on WRMJ after this.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands of the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. 41-0 the final Friday night as Rock Ridge wins their homecoming matchup over Erie Prophetstown. I know going into Friday night's game, I felt a little bit uneasy looking at this physical Erie Prophetstown team you were playing, but you kind of really won a smash-mouth game on Friday night.
Yeah, we came out we were kind of shocked that they came out with their corners and safety so soft, but you know, we knew that the easy way would be to get outside, throw short stuff, but we really wanted to challenge our guys, and we kind of getting the running game going a little bit, because I know that's been slow this year, and we feel like it's going in the right direction for sure. So we're proud of our guys for really grinding that out, and we kind of challenged them at halftime again. We thought, you know, first half, it was 14-0, and it had the feeling that it could have been 28-0, 35, just had that feeling, but yet you had to go in with the message to the guys that they're one drive away to making this a one-score game because of our sloppiness. So, but the guys really answered the toll, like you said, coming out after half. I think you said two first downs after the first half, so the defense did a real nice job.
And I think the one thing that I like about what I'm seeing offensively, especially as the season progresses, you're getting plays from a lot of different kids. Schweigen's able to spread the ball out, so a lot of people touch the ball. And sometimes in the season, kids don't get to touch the ball, and then you say, well, I need them to make a play in week 10 or week 11, and they can't do it. So there are a lot of kids that are getting reps and getting chances to produce, not just to be on the field. I mean, they're producing. I think you have to like kind of that identity as we head toward week 5.
Absolutely. We actually, coming out in the second, third, and fourth quarter, last three quarters, we put receivers on a rotation, and calls don't have to be to, like you said, to one. It doesn't go to Owen Steele or Landon Wheatley or Liam Steele, the certain plays. We're comfortable calling anything we have with anybody that's on the field, and we have kids rotating, and we had Owen go from a wide out on the right to the left to a slot. Like, and it's not because we're doing anything strategic. It's because we feel comfortable with it. And like you said, that's only going to help us in the long run, getting kids reps and touches and some, hopefully some confidence. Because, you know, it does matter. When you have a horse that you maybe give 10 or 15 catches to, well, eventually you're going to meet a team in the postseason that matches up somewhere. You know, you see some dogs in the postseason. So you got to be able to spread the ball around and maybe the weak matchup is the matchup you didn't throw to all year. So, like you said, it's good that Colin's throwing it around, feeling comfortable with anybody out there. It's good we're starting to run the ball a little better because we'll need that come postseason.
And do you, I mean, for a sophomore in small school football, you know, I've been doing this since 1990. I just don't remember a kid not, you know, just taking the ball and tucking it and running. You know, and he just refuses to do that, where he continues. I mean, he extended a lot of plays tonight, because I think Erie Prophetstown, that's a legit defensive team, I think.
Yeah, they do. They're tough up front. They have some good D-line man, though. They have a couple huge D-linemen, and they can move, too. You know, he did. And the good thing about it is that now that he's had this year under his belt, like we've talked about earlier in the season, he's able to come off to the sideline. Yes, we're still making mistakes, but he can come off to the sideline like that one big fourth down conversion to Liam, that crosser. He was able to see the blitz coming from the left. He knew we had one guy to pick up two guys on the backside of our slide, and he was able to take two slide steps to the right and just to buy himself enough, a half of a second to complete that ball for it to pop. But we knew it was going to pop open, but he had to buy that half second, and he realized it and saw it and felt the pressure and stepped and threw. Like you said, he's doing a nice job really just buying that extra half a second to let things develop.
And I think maybe the biggest single play in this game tonight was in the first half when he extended the play and he found Chase Wheatley, who I know wasn't his primary option, that led to a first down, and you're able to eventually score in that drive and go up two scores in the first half.
Yeah, that's going to be a good matchup, or a good combo, I guess you could say. Chase is actually one of the young guys as a sophomore who isn't getting, speaking of those touches, he's one of those kids after the game you're like, he didn't get enough. And but the crazy thing is you got four of those receivers that you can say that to every night, that you'd like to have more touches. So you know, it's good to see him come in and get some big plays, because we know he is more than capable of doing it. And again, it was Colin buying some time, and Chase coming up with a big play, and it definitely wasn't an on schedule play, and we actually worked on a scrambling drill, and it came in perfect right there, and Chase did it perfect, and Colin found him.
All right, defensively tonight, what was the difference for the Rockets? Now, they were missing two key pieces of their equation tonight, but really you didn't give them many opportunities. There was one broken play, and I saw one of the defensive linemen one of the defensive players for Rock Ridge knew he missed his assignment, because it occurred on your side of the field. Other than that, I mean, really, four first downs in the first half, they weren't able to accomplish anything in the second half. I think two first downs. What did you think defensively tonight? What was the difference there?
Did a real good job. Again, up front, one thing that I thought was really going to hurt us and handcuff us was losing Ryan Lower. And Brody Nicholson's done a fantastic job stepping in and helping us out there. Him and Thomas do a real good job at linebacker. They're both quicker kids, quicker linebackers. But just, I mean, we've talked about it multiple times. Those defensive linemen are doing a great job. Jude Finch and, you know, McKay just are very hard to block up front. They do a nice job, and they have high motors. They're not guys that just quit on a play. And the great thing is they have some experience, and like you said, they get it. If something happens, they know why it happened, where they should have been, and can talk to us. And that's such great, you know, upper-class leadership out of those two guys to be able to rely on them on the defensive line. We've been blessed for the past few years with some very special D linemen, and they're just the next ones that are continuing that.
All right. So next week, and you saw a little of them in your preparation for this week with the Newman film against Erie Prophetstown, and it was a 14-7 game last week with Erie Prophetstown trailing by 7. And then the story was Newman said, well, we're going to go back to the wishbone. And I'm like, uh-oh. And then they got it rolling in the big blue, I think, is what they said. Is that what you're expecting again now from them? Or, you know, they've been running spread. But when you say Newman football, especially when you first started coaching against them when Poposi was the head coach, it was, you know, wishbone double tight. Better be able to stop us. If you can't stop us, going to be a long day. What are you kind of expecting, do you think, next week?
I think they're going to feel us out and do both. But you're right. When you saw film, it all of a sudden felt like Newman again when you saw him in Bone. It just felt like it was right for them. So I think we're going to see both. He's a good coach, and he brought some good things over from Sterling, and they run a good offense there at Sterling, and a lot of the same concepts. And so he's kind of molding the two, but they do have some tough concepts out of spread too. So it's not like they can't do it. I think maybe just like you saw tonight, we were able to get to some of the edge out to CD gap with some tight end sets running the ball. And I think that's, nothing against them, but I think that's where a little weaker part of their defense was. And when Newman got in double tight Bone, they were able to hit that CD gap a lot where it was soft on the edge. So I think we were both able to kind of take advantage of the same areas on the field. So, whether it's a defensive matchup thing, a scheme-wise thing, I think they're going to have an idea of both coming into the game, and we're going to have to prove that we're going to have to get them out of Bone. Because if Newman runs up against you and they get 5-6 yards a chunk, they can just live in it, and then you're in trouble. So we're going to have to prove that we can stop them in that and get them back to spread, which isn't a win because they still can do things well in spread. So, but yeah, they look more like Newman and Bone, for sure. It has that Newman feel.
And the only other weird nuance of the season, now in the postseason, you normally can do it if you're going to play on artificial turf. You can normally get a practice location somewhere, maybe one day during the week. Do you think you have an opportunity to get a turf practice somewhere? Because that's kind of weird. You play grass all year, and then lo and behold, boom, you go in and play artificial turf in the middle of the season against a really good team.
Yeah, it is different. I'm not going to lie. When we had played Westville in the postseason, our friends over at UT hooked us up, and we practiced there. And it's a big deal to see the ball bounce. The kicking game, just the way the ball reacts with the turf and your foot, the way it catches on it, it is a very different feel. I would doubt for, regular season, we'll probably go into it blind, I would guess. I don't know. I'll probably actually, now that you mentioned it, it's something that it was kind of, I didn't give a thought to because I was so dang nervous about this week. Yeah, thank you. But we'll let you do a couple of calls for us and see if you can hook us up with a time somewhere. But I might go check with the coaches and see if they want me to try. But we every year we've played there, we've usually just stuck at home during the regular season.
I know a guy at UT, so do you, Toby Whiteman and Andy Say. All right, nice going, man. I'm pumped for next Friday. That'll be a fun game, Newman and Rock Ridge, because there have been some great games in that rivalry over the years.
Oh, it's a great matchup, and there's years where we felt like we won the game, but not on the scoreboard, and it's just a tough physical game. You got to do everything perfect. You can't give them any turnovers or any extra possessions because they capitalize. So you're right. It'll be a tough one. It'll be a good one. It'll be a good measuring stick for us.
Please let the temperatures be in the 50s next week. Rockets win it Friday night, 41-0 over Erie Prophetstown. Jim Taylor on WRMJ.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it. Because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. He's Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Aledo, and we're Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio. Jim, an interesting story you shared with me and we'll share with the listeners today. We've heard a lot about, unruly fans and coaches and the official shortage, and the state of Washington's Athletic Association came up with an interesting concept. body cams, very much like we see with law enforcement.
Yeah, crazy. I was on the National Federation of State High School Association site. You can see it at nfhs.org. And the headline is WIAA announces pilot program, as Brian mentions, of body cameras on officials. So this is the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association. The lead sentence: to address ongoing issues with bad behavior, a high volume of ejections, and concerns over the safety of officials, the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association and Washington Officials Association announced that they have launched an initiative that will try out the use of body cameras on officials. Now, I think this is a good idea. That they started it late last school year, and they've yet to release the report on what it found. But how they did it is approximately 100 basketball officials across the state of Washington. They began using body cameras in contests beginning last January. So the kind of how it works, three possible triggers will activate use of the body camera. Once activated, officials have been instructed to wait until the situation has been resolved before deactivating the body cam. Here are the triggers. Unsportsmanlike technical foul, an event that creates an unsafe, dangerous environment for the official, fighting, fan storming the court, etc. And then finally, discriminatory or harassing behavior that causes a stoppage in play or delays play from resuming. So as we chuckle about this, it is a sad state of affairs, though, when you say, man, officials, you know, let's suit them up with body cameras. Do you think this is a good idea, yes or no? I don't know. I'm torn on it because is it really that bad? And what kind of, I guess, statement is it when you say we have to outfit high school sports officials with body cameras? Man, that's not a good place, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I understand the reasoning behind it and the thought of maybe trying to, you know, cause people to think twice about unruly behavior. But we've seen other videos of brawls and such. Now, obviously not up close. I'm not sure if that's going to stop them. And it may lead to other, you know, physical confrontations. Maybe a fan goes ballistic and, you know, somehow tears that body cam off or whatever. I don't know. I always thought that when you knew you were being filmed, you're a little more cautious than when you know there's no record of your behavior. But this seems a little extreme. But as you say, we'll wait and see kind of their conclusions after that pilot program.
And I think one of the things, you know, in defense of it, in allowing body cameras, or it's a pilot project, it was late last school year, you know, you can get away from the he said, she said if the body camera is activated from one of those three situations I mentioned, where that kind of gives you the concrete evidence of, hey, what is happening? Why is this body camera being activated? And then you have official record of that incident. Now, as I read this, you know, clearly the next thing I was thinking about, would that lead to, you know, body cameras for coaches? And when they have to deal with parental issues, and I know I've harped about this last year numerous times with you, Brian, and not just last year, many times, about these preseason meetings where, you know, the parents have to sign normally a code of conduct, and normally one of the things is always you can't approach the coach immediately after a game in regards to playing time. But more times than not, that still happens. And still I'm waiting for what, you know, the penalty is for something like that. Do you think this could lead to, you know, coaches in a pilot project, they have to be outfitted with body cameras? I don't know.
It's a good point and a good question because, yes, they need protection as well, you know, in that situation. And I think maybe, you know, just that idea of now you're on film will keep things a little more civil. But I would think that sometimes, you know, people would kind of step back and cooler heads would prevail, but we always hear these horrible stories about things going on. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, is everybody going to have a camera on and players? Or are they going to have them for, you know, fouls that maybe go, you know, outside of the rules? I mean, you know, maybe I'm going a little too far there. But, yeah, I mean, you'd like to have video of a lot of those interactions.
Well, and it just – the other thing it does for the officials with this pilot project, and I'm really curious to see what the report finds, because it is another step of training for the official when he or she has to worry about, you know, play on the field or play on the court. And now also you have to factor in, well, I have to operate this body camera too, because there's an idiot here causing problems. So I have to deal with that and document that. So, but again, you can find that on the National Federation of State High School Association website, nfhs.org. Again, WIAA announcing pilot program of body cameras on officials. We're talking about the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association. He's Brian Rouge at WCCI Radio. I'm Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Toledo. And this is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
Start cross-country season off right with a stop at 6140 Run in Galesburg. Build your endurance with a pair of Saucony cross-country spikes. Plus, save during the Hey Dude Shoes closeout sale. Don't fall for the online fakes. Get pairs of Hey Dude Shoes for as low as $40 and boots for as low as $65. This is your sign to get moving. Visit 6140 Run in Galesburg today.
All right, winding down the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning, we head toward week five. So halftime of our games next week will be the halfway point of the regular season. Yep. In 2024. When do the golf regionals start? Do they start next week? Because I know the conference took place already.
Well, that was the boys' conference meet is this week, I think. I don't know.
So the following, I think maybe the last week of, so it's hard to believe that we're talking about fall postseason activities ready to get underway as well. So, by the way, Wayne Bennett, I saw he texted me. He said Sunny Lane Field. He said, shut your mouth. It's always going to be Sunny Lane Field. But one of the funny stories about that I remember early in my career, this I'm drawing back to John Hoshite. I made a joke, I remember, early. This was like about the horn that they always run down there when Monmouth then scored. And everybody, like, visiting schools would get really offended by it because they would just roll everybody. And he goes, you can't joke about that on the air. He told me that back in the early 1990s when they got it rolling. But we'll get ready for week five next week. By the way, did you ever find out, we've talked about this a couple times, and I'm mad because I'm not going to call Jason Kirby. I want him to
I need to
call in response to hearing this. Yeah. So will somebody, you, Jason Kirby, tell me why your schedule has five road games right off the bat in eight-man football, and then you're playing the same team twice? Is that right?
They've played at Galva twice in 4 weeks.
What a bananas schedule that is.
Yeah. So I would assume there's got to be some sort of, like, maybe maintenance or work going on around
the Eight-Man Football Association got mad at Kirby and said, we're giving you five road games.
Because there would be no other logical explanation for that. It is crazy, though. West Central, I think we've talked about this a few times now, but yeah, their first five games this season are road games.
So they're 4-0?
Yes.
Good for them, man.
Yeah.
So awesome.
I forget who they play this coming week, but then they get a wrap up with four straight home games. So crazy.
All right, so next week, just to recap, the Eagles on the road. They're playing at Brett Bielema's alma mater, Prophetstown, home of Erie, Prophetstown, Panthers, the co-op. And, you know, I look at that co-op, and you talk about two great facilities. Yep. They have. They play some of their games at Erie, which is a great...
No, they alternate each year.
Okay, so they play every... So one, I didn't know that. I thought they split the season. But, I mean, they're both great... facilities. I remember the 1 year I was there, it was 2 years ago, I think Coach Abba was coaching, we were broadcasting right in front of the Erie Prophetstown students, and they stormed the field because there was like 28 points scored in the last 4 minutes of the Rockridge Erie Prophetstown game at EP1, and they get stormed the field. And again, the Prophetstown like press box and the Erie Beautiful. Press box are awesome, and the facilities are great. And Terry Tracy would know this. Aledo, did they play at Prophetstown in the playoffs, or was that here? It was here. So that was the year. So Brett Bielema graduated the year before. He didn't play in that game in the playoffs against Aledo. But again, great environment to play up there, and that's a big game, especially if Erie Prophetstown is 100%
healthy.
Which
we're hoping for.
Yeah, and they have their top guys back. That should be a great matchup.
Mm-hmm. And evenly matched if they're at full strength, I think.
And then, of course, I know the marquee matchup in the league next week is Princeton and Monmouth Roseville, but you know, every the tradition and the past history between Rockridge and Newman Central Catholic, those have always been great games. Remember last year, it was a rough night for the Rockets early in the season against Newman Central Catholic, and that should be a great matchup up at Roscoe Eade Stadium. Great place to see a game. And we were talking about last night, what's the best venue in the Western Big Six? I think a few of the guys said they think Roscoe Eade's Stadium at Sterling. I think United Township High School at Soul Bowl is the best place to see a game. Go Panthers and Nick Welch, former Sherrard Tiger assistant. Then we have Tigers try to go on a two-game winning streak. They make the long journey. You go to the end of planet Earth, take a right, and you're at Mendota.
Yep, that's a long trip.
And then
Tigers should get a win, though, hopefully. Yeah. So.
And that's a beautiful facility, too. They have artificial turf at Mendota. They have a great gym, too, by the way. Great facility there. And then Orion, the Chargers, take on the Riverdale Rams. That game in Port Byron, or that Chargers?
Said Orion homecoming for the
homecoming
Chargers.
Homecoming for the Chargers. So those are the games next week as we approach the midway mark. And I can't think of anything else.
No, I think they're really, I mean, the four games, I mean, I think they should be decent. I think Sherrard is a pretty heavy favorite against Mendota, but I think Riverdale-Orion will be a very competitive game, as will Mercer County and Erie Prophetstown, and as will Rockridge and Newman. So
yeah, and I think the, you know, I know everybody, I think that the Mercer County, just from a playoff standpoint, you talked about at the beginning of the show, that's the game really I have a lot of attention on, too, because of what lies ahead scheduling-wise. And I think, you know, being the homer I am, it would be so awesome in heading toward week 7 if both of those teams are on a roll and they're playing one another at 5-1. And I mean, it's going to be a big game regardless of what the records are. Do they have has Murray, he got that trophy done yet or not?
I think he said it's not quite done yet, but they'll have, like, it's like they're, I think they had to do one more thing to it.
By the way, how do you think, how long do you think Glenn Cook has been working on his PA material for that game?
Yeah, it's probably quite a bit.
And
He's excited.
I saw today I was scrolling Facebook.
His novel that he wrote.
Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. I didn't read it. I saw it. I didn't read it.
Holy
shit. I didn't read it, but I liked it. I didn't read it, but I liked it. That's what I did.
It took him forever to write that thing. That post was longer than the game last night.
He mentioned everybody you could possibly mention.
I
love his Facebook post, though.
I wanted to say again last night at halftime, man, the energy of the halftime show at Rock Ridge was like a full, what are half times? 18 minutes, 15, and they put the 3 minute on the clock.
Last night at Mercer County, it was 20.
Oh, because of the home
youth football night.
Oh, but so they performed straight for 15 minutes high energy with the pep band. The marching band, and then the dance team, and then I think the cheerleaders too did a routine, and it was all high energy.
Yeah, and then now, the Rockets brought the energy in the second half.
But Jake Walker and the marching band at Rockridge have done such a tremendous job this year, and I keep telling everybody, and everybody's really agreeing with me on this, is they want us, when I tell them the idea, well, I told Mr. Ruggles' lovely wife over at Farmer State Bank yesterday, I said, well, what do you think about if we do a game once a year where if we're playing at home, the Sherrard band comes over and plays, or the Rockridge band comes over.
Stop saying we don't go to Mercer County. Like
my taxes at Unit 404.
Right.
But the Mercer County School District, if If the Sherrard Tigers come over to Pratt Memorial Field, I'd like to see 1 year where they bring their band over. Or if Mercer County goes over to Sherrard or Rock Ridge, then the Golden Eagle Marching Band, and then they have like a joint performance, and then they play like, you know, during timeouts and stuff opposite end of the field. So bring music together. Right.
Yeah, I don't know what you want me to add because that's the third straight week you've
said
that.
No, I know.
So I've kind
keep,
of said my
keep,
piece on that, I feel
like. I
keep
telling people, and then I thought it was great with the conference affiliation, how Mr. Murray proceeded and got a traveling trophy together, because I think that's awesome, and that's a
it
good
is
tradition.
Awesome.
And that should have been a tradition long, you know, back in the Olympic conference days. They should have played for some kind of traveling trophy. So.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think that, you know, there's a few big games in between Mercer County and Rock Ridge finally getting to play, but that'll be exciting when we get there in a couple of weeks. So looking forward to that.
All right. That'll do it for When's the View from the West podcast? If people want to listen
it's out
to that
already.
Too. Oh, it's out. So you can listen to instant reacts from last night around.
Me, that. You, Mitch, Greg, and Stock.
Yeah.
All right.
And then a guest appearance by the
and Randazzo. I forgot Randazzo showed up. Yeah, he's man, that's a fun group of people to talk to. I wish we could just stay in that call for 5 hours.
Well, and they need to throw Dan Pearson in the equation because I think he'd be a perfect fit for that anyway sometime.
Everyone on that panel is absolutely hilarious. So, like I said, that's a good way to kind of bookend the show. That's always so fun to be a part of, and I really, those guys are awesome to talk to and just to work with, and they do a great job, and they're all so funny too, which is what I like the most about them. So,
all right. Well, let's get excited for, man, I tell you, some compelling games. Next week on the WRMJ platform, leading up to Friday, we'll have more coverage, of course, and should be a fun week getting set for that. And like I said, Mercer County at Prophetstown taking on the Erie P-Town Panthers, the Rockets at Roscoe Eads Stadium taking on Newman Central Catholic, Sherrard makes the long trip over to Mendota, and the Chargers celebrate homecoming against the Riverdale Rams.
Looking forward to it.
All right, for Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, this is WRMJ Sportsline.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. By your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business. And by 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, A-Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. The Free Seating has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.